Welcome to Keep Calm. We would love for you to join us on Fridays from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. For more information, check out our website at www.faithwalking.com, where you can scroll down to the Spaces for Wholeness Groups section and click on Keep Calm. You can also email us at info@faithwalking.us.
We were talking about five characteristics of a regressive society, if y'all remember those. And we had covered two of the five. We had talked about that. And so what is regressive society? Regressive society is any period where the anxiety in a culture, in a city, in a congregation, but really in the larger society at large, when anxiety goes up, people's behavior levels tend to go down. Let me say this: when the chronic anxiety goes up, so when the chronic anxiety, which is people's perceptions about a threat, when people see threats everywhere, when that goes up, people's level of emotional maturity goes down. And they begin to behave at less mature, in less mature ways, and at less mature levels. And so the theory tells us, and by the way, I'm convinced we live in a time of regression, where there's tons of anxiety everywhere, and therefore there's polarization. And the first two characteristics of a regressive society are reactivity. So we have intense reactions to events and to one another. And everything gets taken personally. And we talked about that. I'm not going to go back over it all. And then the second characteristic is herding, that we herd into groups of people that think like us. And we herd into the groups to make us feel safer and to make us feel better. Oh, well, at least these people think and see it the way I do. And the natural result of that herding is polarization. So now the people that see it different than I do are the enemy. And so we become very divisive. And that's an evidence of regressive society. And so reactivity and herding are the first two characteristics. This comes from the work of Edwin Friedman, who's written a couple of books. One is called A Failure of Nerve. And in it, he is one of the prime thinkers of family systems theory. So today, the next characteristic of a regressive society is what Friedman describes as blame displacement. And basically, blame displacement is where everyone begins to behave as if they are victims in the world and don't take responsibility for themselves. And so we blame others for our problems. We blame government. We blame leaders. We blame others in a variety of ways. And so the antidote for that is to learn to take more responsibility for our own lives, to quit blaming and take responsibility. One of the evidences of blame displacement is litigiousness, which is a big word that says we sue people at the drop of a hat. And one of my best illustrations is the woman here in the States that ordered a cup of hot coffee. And she ordered it through the drive-thru. And when she took it from the attendant at the window, somehow she fumbled it and the hot coffee spilled on her lap and burned her. And she sued McDonald's for serving her hot coffee. And she won. And so it's living in a society where everybody blames everybody for everything, where we sue people for the least little bit of thing. And this is a piece that he says, and he talks a lot about leaders. And I want you to hear this piece. He says, the least mature, and by that he's talking about the least emotionally mature, get selected as our leaders, while those with the greatest integrity, the very ones who have the best capacity to pull our society out of regression, don't even run for office. And I find that we just had our some of our election this week here in Texas, and the preliminaries, and it's just fascinating to think about it through the lens of, okay, we're a society in regression, and the least mature candidates get elected in a variety of ways, and I can see it. Yeah. So the least emotionally mature are elected to be our leaders, and the very ones that are more mature, that would have the capacity to help us deal with these issues, don't even run. So there's this idea of I blame other people. There's always an excuse. It's always somebody else's fault. She made me do that. He made me, you know, made me mad and angry, and so I behaved in these ways. That's what blame displacement is. Anybody, do y'all have a question or thoughts around that? Anything you want to talk about related to it?
This isn't really discussion, but I just want to say how I feel this is, I think this is totally dead on. Like everything you've said thus far and the one we did a couple of weeks ago, I see it everywhere right now in society.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you, Laura. And so one of the things that I often in doing the work we do in faith walking, I get asked, often by young parents, how does this apply to parenting? And for me, the way it applies is this. I think this is what parenting really is about. If you want to, you know, if you could summarize parenting in one thing, it's taking my children at appropriate ages and increasing their capacity, helping them to increase their capacity to take responsibility for their own lives, so that when I launch them into adulthood, they know what it means to take responsibility for their own lives, to not be immature and blame, well, it was my boss, or it was my girlfriend, or it was my two buddies, or it was my parents' fault, it's the teacher's fault or whomever, but that I'm learning in increasing ways to take responsibility for my own life, which means that I'm taking responsibility to make some of my own choices. And I'm also taking responsibility for the consequences of my choices, even when my choices are bad.
Ken?
Yep.
Is there a connection or a line that can be drawn from blame displacement to boundaries?
Yes.
Could you draw that line for me?
Yes. I think I'm not seeing all the faces. I think that's Jerry, the voice, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, Jerry. So blame displacement, this is my understanding, and I'm kind of processing as I go, but blame displacement means I don't have boundaries. And therefore, I want to make you responsible for what happens to me. And so as let's come back to the parenting idea. If I'm teaching my children how to take responsibility for their own lives, then I want to teach them how to develop some clear guiding principles for their life. And I want to help them learn and establish and maintain clear self boundaries in their life. And boundaries are about who owns what. Boundaries are about what am I responsible for? And so if I can grow in my understanding of boundaries to know, okay, these are the things I'm responsible for, and these are the things I'm not responsible for. One of my favorites is I'm responsible for what I say and for how I say what I say. I'm not responsible for how you take what I say. I'm not responsible for how you interpret what I say. I'm not responsible for how you feel when I say what I say. And for me, it's increasing my capacity to understand what I'm responsible for, what I'm not responsible for, and take full responsibility for what I'm responsible for. I'm responsible for my feelings. You are not responsible for my feelings. And if I say, well, you hurt my feelings, well, yeah, okay, you said something, you did something, and my feelings were hurt, but ultimately I'm responsible for my feelings and I need to deal with it and do whatever I need to do with it. I don't want to get lost in the weeds. So let me say one other thing, and boundaries are about establishing limits and allowing consequences. And so I'm responsible for setting limits in my life. And then I'm responsible to allow the consequences that of my choices to come into my life. And those are boundaries. And so boundaries are one of the ways I learn not to blame others. I learn, okay, I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for letting you know what I need. I'm responsible for letting you know what's okay and what's not okay. And so I don't blame you for doing something that's not okay if I haven't told you that's not okay. That's me taking responsibility for my life. Did that help you, Jerry?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Thank you for the question. Anybody else have a question around this one? I think we could say it another way by simply saying that one of the key indicators of emotional maturity is the capacity to take responsibility for myself and to quit blaming others. If I'm an employer and I have a set of employees and one of my employees is constantly blaming the system, blaming the boss, blaming coworkers, blaming somebody for his or her issues, that's an indicator that that person is not very emotionally mature and they are going to struggle in life until they begin to take responsibility for themselves. And so as an employer, my role would be, okay, I need to set some limits with this person and I need to allow them to suffer some consequences because that's the only way they're going to learn. They're not going to learn by me telling them more. They're going to learn by... So we learn to take responsibility for ourselves when we have to suffer consequences for our own choices. I think that's what I'm trying to say. We'll move to number four. A fourth characteristic of a regressive society is a quick fix mentality. Friedman describes that in this kind of language. People have a low threshold for emotional discomfort. Or they just have a low threshold for pain at all. And constantly seek symptom relief. And they seek symptom relief rather than fundamental change. All I want is to feel better. Just make me feel better. I don't care if the system gets fixed. I don't care if the problems get solved. All I want to know is I'm going to be okay. Just take care of me. And as a result, then, this person who wants a quick fix mentality is constantly impatient. Here's the way, this is Friedman's language. So a quick fix attitude will affect a person's choice of physicians, therapists, ministers, and politicians. So I find it fascinating. He threw ministers in there. So I go to a church that gives me a quick fix. I don't go to the church that gives me long-term change. So what I would say is a person needing a quick fix doesn't want to go through faith walking, because faith walking is not quick fix. Faith walking is deep internal hard work. A quick fix mentality is also characteristic of people who want certainty and easy answers. They avoid struggle. I'm gonna risk offending some folks. But I want to say this, because this illustration pops into my head. So I live here in Texas, and one of the big issues here in Texas politically these days is the border wall. Do we build the border wall? Do we not build the border wall? And what I want to say is the border wall is a quick fix and an easy answer, in my opinion, because the issues of immigration and illegal immigration, the issues of the drug cartels controlling our borders, those are far deeper, bigger problems. And so let's just throw up a wall. Let's have a wall. And all I want to know is I'm safe, and that wall makes me feel safe, and I feel better. But behind it, there are deeper issues that go unresolved. And so a quick fix mentality is, I just want to go to bed at night knowing I can sleep better because there's a wall built down there. And so for me, that's what it looks like. And so we avoid the struggle of wrestling with the issues. How do we solve some of these really big issues that we have? And we've got really big issues. And so it's all about quick fix. And so one of my favorite quotes, and if you have been around me very long, you've heard me say this, and if not, you're going to hear it today. The quote comes from Friedman, but here's what he says. I think this is a direct quote. He says, "Raising our own threshold for the pain another is experiencing can often motivate the other to take more responsibility for his or her life." For me, I change it slightly and say, if I can increase my own capacity to deal with the emotional discomfort that another person is experiencing. It helps me grow up because I'm tolerating more emotional discomfort in myself, and it helps the other person grow up because suddenly they have to begin to take responsibility for their own lives. So rather than a quick fix, rather than, oh my gosh, I can't stand that you're struggling, I can't stand that you are in distress now, and I'm going to fix it for you, I have the capacity to allow you to struggle so that you can grow, because that's an opportunity for you to grow in your own emotional maturity. So what's that stir up for you? Quick fix.
On a personal level, this stirs up for me dealing with one of our kids with their issues of addiction, and also codependency surrounding that, which I think we've established some pretty good boundaries, but it's been a process, and it is really tough to see, especially when you have a loved one, somebody that you're close to, continuing to make poor decisions, and it's painful. It'd be nice if there were, but there's not. And gosh, if there were, I'd have already done it, you know?
Yeah. But I hear you, Trish. That.
And that's encouraging to me though, too, because it's kind of coming to a crisis point again. And this person needs to make their own decisions, you know, not count on us to bail him out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know how hard that is. I mean, okay. And we're going to have to muster up the courage to let him fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And man, that's hard. But here's the hope. But the hope is that in doing that, that person slowly but surely begins to learn how to take responsibility for his or her own life.
Absolutely. And that is our hope. That is.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Ken, this is just, I find this all very helpful. Just beginning with self-awareness, just the having eyes to see this dynamic going on, both around me and in myself. And, you know, being willing to ask myself the question, am I making this choice because it's a quick fix? And is that really the best choice?
Right.
And then seeing that go on around me and being aware and then looking at how to best deal with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The awareness soul for me around all this is just the awareness of how much I still need to grow. Of how far I need to go, but also that the idea that growing in emotional maturity is a lifelong journey. And so I'm increasingly developing more capacity to tolerate emotional discomfort. I'm increasingly learning to take responsibility for my own life and allow others to take responsibility for their lives. I'm increasingly learning how to be more self-differentiated. And all of that makes me a healthier person. I think I'm probably getting into it in the next one. Yeah, I'll just pause there. Let me just stop there. Well, let me move on to number five, and then we'll talk about all of it. How about that? And number five on his list of five characteristics is a lack of well-differentiated leadership. And for Friedman, one of the evidences of a lack of well-differentiated leadership is a failure of nerve to take a stand. For me, I like, so if I have a little formula that helps me. So a well-differentiated leader is one who is both self-regulated and self-defined. Self-regulated, I'm going to keep it simple here. Self-regulated in that he or she has the capacity to manage his or her anxiety, take a stand, and stay connected. That's being self-regulated. Managing anxiety, the capacity to take a stand. So I don't need other people to approve of every decision I make, but I also don't cut off from people when my decisions make them anxious. That's being self-regulated. And then the other half of that is, and also being self-defined. And the way we define ourselves is with our boundaries and our guiding principles. And for me, when I look for leaders to lead me, I'm looking for those characteristics as much as I can see them. Do they have the capacity to manage their own anxiety so they're not reactive all the time? Can they take a stand on whatever their thoughts and issues are, whether I agree or disagree? But also, can they stay connected to the people that disagree with them? And do they have clear self boundaries and a clear set of guiding principles that are guiding their thinking to help them make that stand? So what I was going to say a moment ago, if you want a child, a spouse, a client, a boss, or an elected official to change. I'm going to read it again. If you want a child, spouse, client, boss, elected official to change, here's what you do. Stay connected to them and change yourself rather than trying to fix them. Stay connected and change yourself and give up trying to fix them. That's the best chance you have of changing somebody else. And those are the five characteristics. So what does that stir up in you, or what thoughts does it provoke for you? So today we looked at blame displacement, a quick fix mentality, and a lack of well-differentiated leaders or leadership. Anything you want to talk about? I can't see your hands today because I'm on my phone, so I need you, if you want to speak, just unmute your mic and dive in, please.
So I was thinking about the quick fix mentality and how, as a pastor, so many people come to you and want want prayer, want something that will just take everything away and just change their situation.
Yep.
And how I've had to learn, and I think this comes into the self-differentiation side of it as well, that tough love is the good thing in that place. That's that mm-hmm. patting them on the back and saying they're there isn't mm-hmm. going to fix them long term. And that's really hard for someone who is like just wants to give them a hug and tell them it's going to be all right. But I know that that can do more damage. And I've been trying to, like, I taught a session on listening prayer recently. And just was like, we're not responsible for carrying what they're coming with. All the responsibility that we can have is to point them to Jesus in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so they're not, like I always say, it's like, you don't want them phoning you at 2 o'clock in the morning. If they wake up mm-hmm. and they're anxious, like they don't need to talk to you. They really need to talk to Jesus. And so that's just been something I've been learning as to how to deal with people that are struggling and that I do love. And it's okay to say, no, I'm not here to fix you. I will pray for you, but really who you need is Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, Michelle. Really good. And you're right. Often, especially those of us in helping ministries, you know, well, we're helpers. Well, let me help fix that for you. I think the one thing that I would add is they need to turn to Jesus, but I totally agree with that, but they also need to take responsibility for themselves. And that would be the piece that I add to that, that yeah, ask God for guidance. Ask God to show you, ask God to enable you, empower you. But ultimately, this is what I believe. God won't do for you what God is asking you to do for yourself.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I guess what I would say, Michelle, sometimes people can, they can either blame God or they expect God to rescue them. And God's saying to them, no, I've given you all the tools. You need to rescue yourself. I'm with you, but I'm not going to do it for you. Yeah, good. That's really good, Michelle. I know so much of your story. I'm thinking back 2 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to say that 2 years ago.
I would have wanted someone to fix me 2 years ago.
I know that too. And here you are, way to go.
Thank you. So
I'm applauding your growth and progress. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. And guess what? We all have stories just like yours. Every one of us are on a journey of growth and progress. And I'm different than I was 2 years ago. Tammy DeRider, weren't you on the call a minute ago? Are you still here?
I am still here. Yes.
You have anything to say?
I can't see you.
You know, I was about to type a message into the chat to everyone. It's a little bit tangential. Only in that I've had a really bad week. I mentioned that Monday night at our coaching meeting, but it has continued to be just a really bad week, and I haven't slept well. And all of that makes me ponder my own emotional immaturity, and that's not the point. The point is, I struggled with whether to get on the call today or not, but just to see y'all's faces, this is such a beautiful community and such a safe place. And I'm just really, I'm emotional. I'm just really grateful for all of you. This is a place to be calm. Keep calm and to continue learning and growing. So I'll leave it at that for now. That's okay.
Tammy, that's powerful and beautiful. Thank you for that. And I am glad that this group is that for me and for each of you. That's awesome. And now I want a quick fix. I want to help you. What can I do?
Well, like Michelle said, I would love for you to fix me. Because I clearly am not able to fix myself.
Well, if I knew how, I would. I don't know how.
All of us, as not, you said, are helpers and we're rescuers, and we can't do that.
Yep. Yep, for sure.
Thanks. I'll be fine. Eventually. We all cycle in these crazy life things, but
we do.
You don't make it to this age and not be around the bend a few times.
There you go. And I what I love though is your authenticity and your vulnerability, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think for all of us, you know, an important part of this is just owning up to our own our own emotional immaturity. Mm-hmm. And that can be hard to do. I mean, when you're as old as I am and to admit I'm emotionally immature.
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm in a church with a lot of younger people and actually, I mean, I use humor with it, but periodically I tell different ones of them that I want to be like them when I grow up. And mm-hmm. they get a big kick out of that because, you know, I'm old enough to be their father or even their grandfather. You know, but I'm actually serious about that, you know, in the sense of, I feel like I'm on a growth journey and, part of faith, what faith walking has done for me is helped me be at peace with that and, be willing to be that and grow and, see God's hand in that and, be able to be in that place.
That's fantastic, Saul.
It's almost a strange badge of honor in faith walking. The more frequently and louder you can express your emotional immaturity. Woo! We celebrate that, Saul. Way to go, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and we do for this reason, because this is what we believe also, that until it's spoken out loud, we don't get healing from it. We were in our coach's conversation earlier today. That was the exact thing that got said. And I do believe there's power in just bringing it into the light and saying it out loud. And it begins to lose its power over us in the moment that we do. And so we do celebrate that.
Well, in line with that, let me admit, that when we were going through these at first, I was thinking, oh yes, I can see this all around me. And then all of a sudden I thought, oh dear, I can see this in me too. Whoops.
Yeah, Judith, that's the bad part, isn't it? It's like a mirror reflecting back and I'm thinking, okay, oh, I know 100 people that do this every day. And guess what? I'm 101.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I see it. Oh my.
I just wanted to bring Trisha's prayer conversation from last week into this conversation as well, thinking about our requests and pleads with the Lord, and that we somehow expect that the responses will be to our emotional, you know, just, yeah, We expect less than he will give, because we are not mature in our emotions and our spiritual relationships.
Yeah.
I'm thinking just that the flip side of all that we're talking about is also recognizing where we've grown and rejoicing in the spiritual maturity the Lord and emotional maturity the Lord has brought us to. And, you know, because otherwise it can turn into kind of a weak victim as opposed to also recognizing where we're doing well.
Absolutely so. I believe that's so important. I believe it's so important to celebrate our progress, to recognize that, yeah, I've still got a long, long way to go, but I've made a lot of progress too. And I'm so different than I used to be. And to celebrate, I'm totally with you. I think that helps us keep going. All right, my friends, it's a pleasure to see you. I apologize that my technology isn't working the way I want it to. It makes me a little anxious, but hopefully all will be back next week, and I look forward to seeing you then.